Welcome to the Teaching Space podcast, coming to you from Guernsey in the Channel Islands. Hello and welcome to the Teaching Space podcast. It's Martine here. Thank you so much for joining me. Today's episode is an interview. I am very excited to introduce you to Craig Randall. Craig, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well, Martine. Thanks so much for having me on. How are you doing?
I am very well too. Craig is an educator and an author. But what I thought I'd do to start the episode off is ask you, Craig, to introduce yourself to the Teaching Space podcast listeners.
Okay, super. My name is Craig Randall. I am the author of a recently published and came out in September book called Trust-Based Observations. But I think we need to go back further and tell my rather eclectic educational journey. I live in the Seattle, Washington area, by the way. So I started out my career as an elementary school counselor and did that for a number of years and even worked as a middle school counselor with kids with severe behavior disabilities one year in the classroom. And literally, these are in different days, but I had to do physical restraint every single day during that year, which was crazy. But in the United States, the athletics are oftentimes, they happen at school as well, right? So there's the teams and all that. And so we often coach on the side because we love it and also for the extra money. And so I coached basketball on the side, and an opportunity came to do a little, well, major detour. And so I detoured into small college basketball coaching and did that for 7 years. And then my wife and I were hitting 40 and feeling like that was the end of the world. Not really, but we felt like we had to do with something we'd always talked about when we first met was our desire to work at international schools. And so we took another major detour and we got hired at the American School of Warsaw and moved overseas with our then kindergarten children who just graduated last June. And I taught there. And then when we were there, one of the administrators said, "Hey, Craig, you ought to think about getting into administration." And I thought, me? No, the dark side, never. And but then I thought, well, okay. And so then I signed up for a program in my home state and started going in the summer. And that's where I met my mentor. And he was the most amazing guy in our supervision class where we talk about evaluation, observation, all that. He just started saying, you have to be in classes every day. You have to be spending time with teachers, observing them, talking about their teaching with them, supporting them, helping them grow and get better. And I remember at the time I was really frustrated with the observation process in general. And I talked to people about it and they would just say, well, yeah, but that's just the way it was. But then this guy presented, I don't know, it was like this hallelujah moment for me that maybe doesn't have to be that way. And in his class, I won't go too much into it right now, but we would practice doing observations all the time. And so we'd have to bring these little 10-minute mini lessons into class. And then one of us would take turns observing. And then afterwards, we'd immediately do the reflective conversation. And then we'd all talk about the reflective conversation together. And back then, this I didn't know this at the time, but trust-based observations wouldn't have happened if I hadn't come across him. And the observation reflective conversations, though, were anchored by two questions that still anchor trust-based observations today. And they were, what were you doing to help students learn? And if you had it to do over again, what, if anything, might you do differently? And if you think about that, as opposed to the observer coming in and just telling you what they think, it's such a dramatic shift. And so anyway, without going too much into that right now, then we got an assistant principal job at an international school in Korea, and that moved on to a principal job at another school until we came home in 2018 and I wrote a book.
Craig, that is a fantastic, interesting career that you've just described there. And one of the key things that you talked about that piqued my interest is, of course, lesson observations. Now, longtime listeners of the podcast will be aware of my interest in lesson observations, specifically as a tool for professional development. So when you approached me to talk about your experience in this area, I was intrigued. So I'd love it if you dug into a bit more detail on the development of this concept of trust-based trust-based observations. I'm particularly interested in the trust bit, as personally, I believe that's the cornerstone of successful professional development, whether it's observation-based or not. So let's just dig into that in a bit more detail, if you don't mind.
No, absolutely. And so really, like I said, that was the start of it, was in those classes. And so I'll say I went into being an assistant principal really, really confident about the teacher observation process, and with a really, really firm belief that that was the biggest key as a principal in terms of your work, in terms of being able to influence, improve teaching and learning. And so I went in and I was really lucky, because if you think about, at least in the United States, and I imagine in the UK as well, there are pretty strict systems that you have to follow. Like in my home state, you have to use either Marzano or Danielson or the University of Washington system. And so overseas, we didn't have those same strict rules that we had to follow. And so I had a principal at that point in time who was at a point in his career where really what excited him most was having somebody young and enthusiastic. And that was me. And so I told him about this way of doing observations. And he said, yeah, let's do it. 3 20-minute observations a day. And so he started doing it too. And so it was really, really amazing, because just almost immediately I would have teachers say, thanks so much for asking me what I think. Like, I've never had that happen before. People that have been teaching 20 some years saying no one had ever asked them about their own teaching. And so instantly, I mean, I loved it when I was a student working on it, but then hearing teachers instantly respond like that, like it just clicked something, and I wasn't sure what it was. But then as we moved further and further into the process, at first we would just ask those questions, and then we'd share what we saw. So really what we were sharing was strengths. There weren't any ratings or anything like that. It was just sharing strengths. And then the next thing one would logically do is to give suggestions. And I chose not to do that. And I think for a couple of reasons. One was probably the new guy wanting to be liked. And two was I just felt like it was really arrogant of me to go watch somebody once or twice or even three times and start telling them what they should get better at. I mean, think what a tiny percentage of teaching we're actually seeing. What if I, by mistake, told a teacher that, wow, I thought they ought to start working at that, and it was something that they were really good at. I just hadn't happened to see it in those 3 20-minute sessions. What would that do to my relationship and that teacher wanting to work with me constructively? And so I waited. And then, to me, the most amazing thing happened, and I think this keyed into what eventually became trust-based observations. Teachers would start to say, well, yeah, but what can I get better at? And then instantly, like, I just knew something had happened because I'd asked them and then because I'd waited. Like, somehow trust had developed. And so really that started the whole process of trust-based observations. And then with more time and more practice, you would just see it repeated and repeated again. And teachers that were even really reluctant, because maybe they'd had 20 years of maybe 10 of which was a principal that was like the getcha model or whatever, even the ones that were reluctant, you'd see them gradually feel more comfortable and safe. And then when it came time to offer a suggestion, and oftentimes it wasn't really an improvement of a suggestion as much as something new that they could add to practice. And you would see them just embrace it and be willing to take these really, I would say, massive risks to grow their practice in new ways. And so somehow that clicked, and ultimately, you know, grew and grew organically over time. I didn't know I was creating a model of teacher observation, but that's really how trust-based observations came to be.
What I can see from your description, or what I can hear, is that by establishing an environment where it's two education professionals having a conversation, it sounds like you created more of a kind of even conversation where both people could contribute something valuable to it. And when that happens, it's pretty exciting, isn't it? It reminds me of an instructional coaching type model where everyone has something to bring to the conversation.
It really is. It's principal as instructional coach. And I think it's there's no hierarchy in it. It's just two colleagues talking. And look, on some ways, you can't take away that your title is something, but you want to do everything you can to get rid of that as much as possible. And I think that's really what ends up happening with it. I want to throw in a couple more things, is that along the way, I discovered some things, and these really weren't until I was writing the book, but traditional models aren't working. And the Gates Foundation actually did a 7-year, $200 million study to improve the quality of teaching, student learning outcomes, and graduation rates through the development of a more robust observation evaluation process. 7 years, $200 million, the RAND Corporation, as they do, came in and studied it all at the end, and the results were no sustained improvement. And so that tells us it's not working. And then the UK's own Matt O'Leary, who is amazing, and he was on your show, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, he was. He was fabulous.
Yeah, he's amazing. And so, and to me, he's the predominant researcher in observation evaluation in the world. And his research found, qualitative research, but it still means something to me, is that as soon as we start to evaluatively rate teachers, they start playing it safe. They stop taking risks. They stop getting innovative, and they stop really their creativity, because your job is on the line. And so they play that so-called dog and pony show and jump through the hoops. And so that tells us that it's not working the traditional way, which is really a hierarchical way. And really, what does a rating or a grade have to do with improvement? It doesn't have anything to do with improvement. And if we want to evaluate teachers, because every job still has to be evaluated, I don't deny that. There's other ways we can evaluate them without rating your pedagogy.
So it strikes me that perhaps as a senior leader going into a teacher's environment and conducting a trust-based observation, obviously you've described that you do your very best to kind of remove your title from the equation and create an equal playing field, a level playing field. But I just wonder if at any point there, for the senior leader in that scenario, there's any kind of conflict, because I've just... in my mind, I'm thinking about the kind of quality assurance, quality improvement dichotomy. Yep. Do you, when you go into that observation, do you have to kind of put a specific hat on to remember what you're doing it for? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, because I've been doing it so long, it just happens naturally.
But, sure.
But I think we do have to be careful. And I think, actually, I just did my first training at a school in rural Mississippi just a couple of weeks ago. And she would self-describe herself as a type A, and she grew up as an athlete. And it was like, okay, coach, what's wrong? What do I have to do to fix it? And she took that model into her first year as a principal and the traditional rated models. And she tells this great story about one of her teachers was one of her strongest teachers. And so in this system was a 1, 2, 3, 4 rating. And so she gave herself, she gave that teacher a 3 on something. And I think under the Danielson model, they say that you can only visit 4, which I think is absurd. But anyway, so she gave her a 3, which would generally be a good rating. The next day, the teacher comes into her office crying because she thought she deserved a 4. And so that tells us something about the judging part of it. But what she realized over the week, and what we all realized over the week, is that if we work from a strengths-based perspective, then teachers respond differently. And one of the things that we talked about was you almost want to think about your conversations with every teacher as if they're that young ingenue kindergarten teacher. And if we think about how, I know that's a stereotype, but if we'd have our conversations with each teacher like that, we're going to be gentler and more kind, and the results would be better. Now, that doesn't mean, like you're saying, getting more to the core of your question, that there aren't temptations. And I think one of the things that we do talk about in the book, and one of the things that even I have to hold myself back on, is that we'll see something right away that we know could be improved. And we just have to bite our tongue at first and let that relationship develop. But we know right away, like when I was at the school a couple weeks ago, I knew like once a third or fourth visit came up, like what would be an area with this particular teacher that I would probably want to work on just from one visit. No, I might change that over time, but we see that. So we just have to bite our tongue. And then the other thing that I'll say is there are still mechanisms for evaluating the teachers. So if we think about evaluation and judgment, and I hate the word judgment, but if we think about evaluation, I think it's fair to say collegiality, right? How do we get along with people? And communication, professionalism, am I doing my duties and jobs that I have to do? Because those happen in any job. Preparation and planning, because that's important for any job. And so I think it's still fair to evaluate in that. And when we evaluate those things, that's not as sensitive to a teacher as evaluating particular strategies or their actual teaching. And so in trust-based observations, we still include elements for that. We've just taken out the rating of the pedagogy. And really what we've done is we've replaced it with the rating of mindset, like looking for a growth mindset. But we've set the whole system up through annual action research goal setting and through professional development communities that support it. And then in the observation reflection conference every time asking about their progress with that. So really we're setting teachers up. So they're set up to be proficient in that area anyway. And it still doesn't mean you can't see a teacher that's problematic sometimes, or that you instantly have worries about that teacher. Like, look, there was a teacher last week or 2 weeks ago that I was like, whew, I don't know what's going to happen in the long run with that teacher, because you could see things, and maybe there are more attitude types of things. We still have to go through the process of doing everything we can to support that teacher and support their growth and offer suggestions. And if for some reason they don't take the offers or they don't grow, it doesn't preclude us from eventually having an action plan or eventually having to make really difficult decisions, because there are a small percentage of teachers that probably shouldn't be teaching. And I find in those situations, if we handle it in that proper positive way all the way along, generally other teachers know as well that teacher's struggling or doesn't get along well with kids. And they usually end up feeling more supported when a principal takes that action, but they've done it in a positive framework.
Craig, that's such a good answer. I like the fact that you highlighted there are aspects of a teacher's practice that can be evaluated, and sort of pinpointing things like planning. I mean, there really are only a few different ways to complete a scheme of work or a session plan or something like that.
Yeah, so putting in the time.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So the fact that you can still evaluate the quality of certain things, but there are other things that it's more about mindset. I really like how you articulated that. That was really interesting. You mentioned professional development communities, and I'm going to ask you a question about that in a second, because that sounds super interesting. But before we go on to that, I just had one more question about the observers in your trust-based observation model, and that is, how do observers stay current in their teaching practice, particularly if they are, for example, in a senior leadership role where they maybe don't teach as much as they used to?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And I think and even if we're really good at something, and I think sometimes teachers can be efficient at something and then sometimes be resistant to change because they're efficient at something. But then kind of what you're pointing to, new research or new things can come along that can point out that, yeah, but something else can be even better. And so I think at the same time, when we're talking about principals and teachers and their own principals and their own growth, there it is important to keep current. And so I think there's multiple ways we can do that, certainly by subscribing to journals or magazines and reading and or whether through social media and Twitter and or LinkedIn or different, seeing different posts and listening to podcasts like yours maybe. And so those are some of the ways, but I think also there's other ways that it can happen too. So one is when we're in teachers' classes so much, and then we've created the conditions of trust that we have, you'll see teachers on their own start to try new things, and not just things you suggest, but things that they suggest because they've been doing their own reading. So we can learn from our own teachers. And I think one of the most amazing things about trust-based observations that I discovered but didn't know before I started was that by being in classes so frequently, we really get to see who's best at what, and then we can use that to tap into that. So that's one area. And then another area is actually on the observation template. There, it's not just an observation template, it's actually a resource tool for teachers and principals. And so under each of the, and we limited the areas of pedagogy to 9 on the observation form, because research says when there's more than 10, we lose the lesson by looking for all the things. And so it's like losing the forest through the trees, and we're looking for everything. We don't actually see the teaching. And so we've narrowed it to 9 things, and there's still an area where you can write other areas of pedagogy that you might witness during the observation. But under each area, we've got what we list as toolbox possibilities, because just like a carpenter, teachers have a toolbox of strategies that they use. And so we have that there for a couple of reasons. One, so we can be more precise as observers in our language. But 2, for teachers to be able to see some other areas in that category that they might be able to use and add to their repertoire. And so we have the word toolbox possibilities listed on the observation form, and it's a clickable web link to another web page that lists, for those that are interested, including administrators, books where you can really dig deep into a subject, but also articles on the subject in general, or articles that might give you a 10-minute read or a 3-minute video on how you can start to incorporate something new into your practice. So the observation template itself hopefully helps the administrators and teachers to be able to continue to build their own practice or their own knowledge as well.
That's a great idea to have the template that is completed off the back of the observation as a resource in itself. That's a really nice idea. I like that. I don't know about you, but I find observing the practice of other teachers the best possible professional development I can get. Mm-hmm. So I like what you're saying about how observers can keep current by seeing a lot of lessons. I think that's a really valid point indeed.
I would say that just real quick that I have, like, if I were to go back in the classroom and teach, I would be like 1,000% better teacher from all the amazing teachers that I've watched do all the amazing things that they do with their students.
Now, I'd really love to find out a little bit more about the professional development community aspect of your model. I'd love to know how they work and perhaps some of the topics that have been investigated in these PDCs.
Sure. So really what we do is we tie it to the observation template. And so really on an annual basis, there's 9 areas. Now, it doesn't mean that someone couldn't choose to offer another potential area for a professional development community. I just haven't had that happen. And so really, so it's the areas on the template, which are learning targets, relationships, management, cooperative learning, 10-2, which is like about reflective processing, working memory, brain science on that, questioning, formative assessment, feedback, and differentiation. And so what we do with each of those is that the way it starts is as an observer, I realize with my teachers who are the best in each one of those areas. And so I tap into that with 1 or 2, depending on the size of my school, 3, maybe more. And we talk to those teachers about next year, if they'd be willing to lead a professional development community. And like by lead, I mean facilitate, but share some of their knowledge with other teachers. And so, and if somebody's not as expert, then we'll provide them training over the summer to go to something so they can become expert. And so we've got our own in-house leader. So instantly you can see there's a little bit of a difference because we're empowering our own teachers. And I can't tell you how amazing that is when teachers are asked to do something. It just built, and then when they're learning, I think in a lot of ways, teachers prefer to learn from their peers than they do from somebody outside coming in. And so you've got this set up. And then at the beginning of the year, each teacher, so even though we don't rate the teachers on those areas, we still provide a rubric for the teachers in those areas. So the teachers self-assess at the beginning of the year and they use that information. And that doesn't mean in certain circumstances that a principal can't point a teacher where maybe it's really important that they improve in one area. But generally speaking, the teachers choose an action research goal for themselves in an area based on their own self-assessment that they want to work in related to one of those areas. And so with the action research goal, they'll usually, the most common way is they'll compare their summative, you know, scores from the year before, and we can get to the whole grading thing, but that's another conversation for another day. But, and then once a month, they meet in their professional development communities and they work together on this chosen area of growth. And then not only in that, they, every month in the observation form, we talked about those 2 questions, but one of the forms we've added over time is tell us about your progress on your action research, your annual goal. And so we're able to pull that up so we know what that is. So if you think about maybe traditional goal setting, and I admit I've been guilty of this, it's like we set those in October or September, send them off to our principal or head of school. And then in May, we get the email about the end of the year where we talk about our annual goals and we go, oh my gosh, what was my annual goal again? And usually we've been lucky enough that we've worked on it inadvertently. But this way, when it's like intermittent reinforcement, when I know that I'm going to be asked about it, because it is a continuous cycle of observations, which we really haven't talked about, right? 12 observations a week, and we just keep cycling through all year. We don't stop. Then I know I'm going to be regularly be asked about it. So then it's front in their mind. And not only is it front in their mind, it's supported through a monthly professional development process with your peers. And so it's really pretty amazing what the growth that teachers will see because of that. And then one of the other things is to keep it self-perpetuating because the teachers that are leading those professional development communities, that year they're leading, they don't really get to work on it in the same way as far as being a participant in someone else's professional development community. So what we aim to do is have somebody that's been a student that year in that professional development community who's developed a real passion for it, have them take over the next year. So it's this continually cycling through of new leaders. So people that were leaders one year can go and become participants the next year. And that's really how it works.
I love that approach because quite often with professional development, in my experience, I do find it's quite often the same people putting themselves forward to lead on certain things. And what you're describing is this kind of circular model where new faces are introduced on a regular basis. And I think that's really important. And the developmental aspect of that is pretty awesome. So I love what you've described there.
It's also like a lot of times we've been to a conference, a professional development conference, and we kind of get overloaded with all these 1 hour sessions and all these different things. And then we try and come back, or we'll do new overload initiative because us as the administrator have been there. So we try and get our teachers to do this or that or the other. And the research says, as soon as we start looking at more than one area at a time of growth, it thins our own focus. And then we end up not really getting better. So this way, as opposed to either one of those other ways, we have 1 year of just focus really, really intently on one goal. And that allows a lot more progress to happen in our development.
I thoroughly endorse that. My professional development cycle at the Guernsey College of FE is actually called the One Thing. And it's called the One Thing because each lecturer focuses on one aspect of their professional practice to develop over the course of the academic year. So I can see similarities between your trust-based model and the model that we've adopted at Guernsey College. We've been doing it for 3 years. I can see from my own observations that it definitely works. So I think that's a really important thing for people to bear in mind. When considering professional development, one thing is a really, really good approach.
Bravo to you. You're right on. I agree.
Going back to the professional development community aspect a little more, I'm quite interested in the peer-to-peer relationship that must create. Now, certainly in my experience, when you enable teachers to own their professional development, it leads to the biggest gains. And that ownership, empowering, I think you used the word empowering teachers to own their professional development also builds that professional trust that you describe. Tell me a bit more about the teacher ownership aspect in your trust-based model.
Sure. And I will say that, look, as administrators on those professional development communities, we always want to have at least one administrator in a building that's not teaching one, because it's possible. Like, I have a lot of experience in Kagan cooperative learning, so I've taught that before, but there might be a year where somebody else has to teach that, because we want one administrator to be able to go to the professional development communities for a couple of reasons. One, for accountability, but two, to be able to see what's going on. And so I think when we combine the observation process where teachers feel safe taking risks. And let me just say this real quick, because I think it matters in what we're going to talk about, is that the bottom line in one of the areas that we have on the observation template is really a 10th area, but it's not on there for the teachers as an area of pedagogy that we're watching for. It's on there for us as observers to send a reminder to teachers regularly that the goal of trust-based observations is for us to develop differentiated relationships with each one of you teachers, differentiated enough so that you can know that if I go into your classroom and you're trying something new and it goes completely sideways, it bombs, it's a disaster, that you can confidently know that the next day when I come into your class to have a reflective conversation, you will receive a congratulatory fist bump for taking risks. So when we do that, when we've created those conditions, I say that growth will just mandated follow, because when we feel safe and we persist in taking risks, which Hattie talks about, growth can't help but follow. And so when we've created those conditions of trust, they permeate everywhere. It's a happier place to work. Teachers want to help each other. Teachers collaborate on their own so much more frequently, not even in these official professional development capacities, but just on their own. Hey, you guys, what did we want? You know, when in departmental meetings, they'll start talking about ideas, and they'll, as a department, decide to work on something too. And so really, it just, to me, it just becomes contagious in such a really, really positive way that they learn from each other. And it's, they feel like taking risks is such a vulnerable proposition, really, because I, like, to me now, even when I take risks, I still feel anxiety. Like, I have a place that wants me to put on a little like 3 to 5 session video series on kind of how trust-based observations work. And like, I have anxiety about it right now. So it doesn't matter how often we do it. It's normal that when we try something new that we have that. But if we can create conditions for our teachers to try and minimize that vulnerability, then they are more willing to take risks. And that just, it just takes over and everywhere. And look, if we think about students and feedback, right? What are we trying to create? We're trying to create critical thinking, risk takers, all those things. And so if we can model that as teachers, if we create conditions like that for our teachers, then it makes it so much easier for them to do the same thing for their students. And then that's the ultimate goal, right? Improve teaching and learning. And, you know, we can talk about individual subjects, but to me, it's way more about the life and preparing them to be successful adults. So if we can create kids that understand risk taking and we fail and then we persist and try again, then we have achieved success.
Oh, Craig, I love that. That is so fantastic. And I really like the idea of contagious professional development. I'm definitely stealing that from you, by the way. Contagious professional development is the way forward. I don't know if that's such a good thing to talk about in a pandemic,
I'm taking it anyway.
Craig, amazing things. I love your passion for observations, and you've said so many fantastic things already. We are kind of edging towards the end of the interview when I'm going to ask you where people can find you online and get you to tell us a bit more about the book. But before I do that, is there anything else you'd like to add?
It was the first. So the book came out in September, and it's a pandemic, and I am on a mission to change the world of teacher observation because I know this works better. And so, but in some ways, it's the best and worst time to have a book on changing the world of observation to come out is during a pandemic. And so, but one of the things that I wanted to make sure with trust-based observations is we always, I always wanted to make sure that we gave back. And so I put out a thing every year. This is really the first year, but it'll be an annual thing where if a school has, in the US, we have free and reduced lunch. And so if a school is higher than 50% free and reduced lunch, they're eligible. And so I had this teacher who wrote the winning essay explain her circumstance, and I was able to go out there a couple of weeks ago. And I think this is really fascinating. She had been a student at this high school in rural Mississippi. It was so rural that I had to stay 40 minutes away from the town to find the nearest Airbnb. So that's how rural it was. And so she'd been a student at that school, had a different career, got into teaching, decided she wanted to be a principal, joined this amazing principal program in Mississippi, which is the lowest performing state in the country on education. And she went in and she did the process. And like I said before, she went in and did this thing. And she went and invited me in. And she followed a principal, by the way, that had for 26 years not done any observations. So imagine that sense of autonomy and no growth and just leave me alone to all of a sudden somebody comes in and starts rating you. She set herself up inadvertently for failure. And so after the week of observation, there's a principal support group on Facebook that she's in, and she posted this amazing thing, and she just said, thank you so much. It was amazing. And she said, by midweek, the teachers were emailing me asking to be observed. And I think really that's just then, you know how word of mouth travels. So we go and do an observations, and then have reflective conversations, and then teachers immediately are experiencing something different. And then the word gets around and they're asking to be observed. And I had another teacher we had department meetings who said, can I speak up? And we said, sure. And she said, in 20 plus years of teaching, this is the first time anybody's ever asked me about my teaching. And it allowed me to put it in context because you see 20 minutes of a block lesson. So you don't know what happened before or what happened afterwards. And that allows me to be able to explain it. And so her experience with that and the teachers asking to be observed after their previous experiences, I just think that speaks to the power of working constructively with teachers to build trust. And that's just one time through teachers are asking because they know it immediately. I can't really put it into words, but it just speaks that there's something there that's different, that works with teachers, that will foster growth.
Craig, that's a fantastic example of the power of trust-based observations and empowering teachers to own their professional development. I love it. So we're going to wrap up the interview, but before we do that, I'd love it if you could tell the listeners of the Teaching Space podcast where they can find you online and where they can get your book.
Thank you. So they can find me at my website, which is trust-based.com. craig@trustbase.com. They can also email me anytime, craig@trustbase.com. I'm happy to have a conversation with anybody about trust-based observations. I'm on Twitter @TrustBaseCraig. I think you sense a theme going on there. And then I'm on LinkedIn as well. And so the book is on my publisher, which is Rowman.com, but it's also on Amazon and Amazon CO UK as well. So you can get it there as well. Trust-based observations.
Amazing. I will make sure there are links to all everything that you've mentioned in the show notes so people can follow up with you that way. Craig, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I wish you the very best of luck with your book and with your mission to change the world with trust-based observations.
Well, thank you, Martine. It was fun for me, and I'm really thankful for the opportunity to hopefully spread the word on a better way of doing observation.
Thank you for listening to the Teaching Space podcast. You can find the show notes for this episode at theteachingspace.com.